So, I have been thinking about how desire is actually a pretty good motivator a lot of times. I mean, it's what gets us out of bed some mornings. It's what pushes us out into the world. Desire is what gives us the courage to do scary, intimidating things like interview for a job or move to a new city where you don't know people or ask someone out. Desire can push us to do our best, and so it can be really helpful. That said, when desire controls us, that's when we're in trouble. I mean, if it's driving your life, watch out. And part of the reason for that is desire is never fully satisfied. Kind of like our appetites. We can gratify them temporarily, but then they come back. If you've ever like stuffed yourself and said, I'm so full, I'm never eating again. And then if you're like me, you're back at it like probably within a few hours. Our desires are never fully satisfied. As far back as 1000 BC or so, the writer of Ecclesiastes said, the eye is not satisfied with seeing. A more recent poet just said, I can't get no satisfaction. Thomas Aquinas, a 13th century priest, founder behind scholasticism, really an intellectual giant who helped shape modern or Western civilization as we know it. Aquinas once answered the question or explored, what would it take to satisfy human desire? To ever finally feel like, I'm satisfied. I've had enough. And the answer that he came up with, are you ready for it? His answer was everything. Everything, every pleasure, every good thing, every experience. If you could somehow experience it all, go to all the places, all the countries in every unique season, right? See every natural wonder, all the sights, all the food, have every sexual partner and experience you desire, you'd have to win every award, climb to the top of every field, own everything that there is to own. You'd have to experience everything to finally go, okay, that's enough. Karl Rahner, one of the most important Catholic theologians of the 20th century, said, in the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable, we learn that ultimately in this world there is no finished symphony. We live with this torment, in Rahner's words. Like, I'm almost there. I'm almost at rest. I just need a little bit more of this or that or him or her. Now, what all of these brilliant minds are tapping into is the reality that desire is infinite, meaning it has no limit. At no point is desire fully satisfied. And because we are finite, did you know that? We have one body, you know, one family, we live in one place, one job. No matter how many fancy cars you have, and if that's your thing, great. But you can still only drive one at a time. Because we are finite, the end result is restlessness. We live in a chronic state of unsatisfied desire. That itch, that no matter how often you scratch it, it doesn't go away. No matter how much you do or achieve or buy or see or experience. And so question, whether you're a follower of Jesus or you're someone who just simply wants to live with wisdom, how do we live with this restlessness? If to satisfy your desire fully is not an option, I mean, even if you had unlimited resources, there's still a little problem of space and time. How do you live with restlessness? Now, some religions, some worldviews teach that your desire, that you should just deny it, that your desires are actually an illusion. That's not what Jesus says. What Jesus in his way would offer as an answer to this question is that human desire is infinite because we were made to live forever with God in his world, and that nothing less than that will satisfy. Jesus would say, listen, put your deepest desires in their proper place on God. Put all your other desires in their proper place below God. That doesn't mean that you don't want. That's never going away. It just means you no longer need that house or that job or that relationship or that account balance or whatever it is to live a happy life. St. Augustine, who was a 4th century bishop in northern Africa, in his Confessions, he wrote, "Thou hast made us for thyself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it finds rest in thee." More recently, Dallas Willard wrote, "Desire is infinite, partly because we were made by God, made for God, made to need God, and made to run on God. We can be satisfied only by the one who is infinite, eternal, and able to supply our needs. We are only at home in God. When we fall away from God," this is key, "the desire for the infinite remains, but it is displaced upon things that will certainly lead to destruction." And so the default setting post-Eden, it's actually not atheism. It's actually idolatry. That we aim our desire not at God, but whatever our desire of choice is, career, marriage, family, toys, hobbies, beauty, sex, PhD, stamp on your passport, you know, accolade in your career. Nothing in this life apart from God can satisfy your desire. Because desire is infinite. Only God can satisfy. And so we end up in a state of chronic restlessness at best. Or worse, frustration, anger, angst, disappointment, disillusionment, this sort of railing against our life. Which, ironically, for many people, you know what that leads us to do? Hurry, overload, busyness, overwork, shopping, materialism, a life of more, which in turn just leads to more restlessness. Now, to make a bad problem worse, all of this is actually exacerbated in our cultural moment where you have digital marketing from a society that is built on accumulation and accomplishment. We see upwards of 4,000 advertisements a day, or advertisements, if you prefer. All of them are designed to stoke the fire of desire in our gut. Buy this, do this, be this, eat this, drink this, go here. Social media, of course, takes this problem and makes it worse. Family and friends who have good intentions, but they all kind of curate or broadcast the best moments of their lives, as we do ours, and that unintentionally plays to our core disorder of envy. So advertising is often an attempt to monetize our desire. I don't know if you've seen the documentary called A Century of Self from the BBC. You can watch it on YouTube for free. And it talks about the rise of modern advertising after the World Wars. That power brokers in Washington, D.C. and in New York sought to sort of repurpose our economy because we had all these, you know, thousands of empty factories. We had tens of thousands of workers now with nothing to do. And so to solve that problem, the goal was to repurpose our economy from a needs economy to a what? A wants economy. Paul Mazur of Lehman Brothers in 1927 famously said, "We must shift America from a needs to a desire culture. People must be trained to desire, to want new things even before the old have been entirely consumed. We must shape a new mentality in America. Man's desires must overshadow his needs." Whew. Hence, things like planned obsolescence. Do you want to know how you know that you're old? You have complained, "They just don't make things like they used to." I say that all the time. Or when you're on Amazon and you buy one thing and the next thing that comes up is other items you might like, and they're usually right, what behavioral scientists call a nudge. Fast forward to 2021. We have an economy built on people spending money they don't have to buy things they don't need. We now spend, the most conservative estimate is twice. Some say it's 10 times, but twice what we spent in 1935 on goods and services, and that's after you factor in inflation. Cars, donuts, vacations, square footage, eating out. There is a multi-billion-dollar marketing industry with direct access to your heart through the little computer in your pocket, and it is all designed on purpose to fan into flames your desires to make money off of your restlessness. All that to say, when our innate human restlessness, when that collides with a culture of accumulation and accomplishment, the result is an epidemic of emotional unhealth and spiritual death. As we've been saying a lot lately, we are all being formed by something at the level of our soul. That's happening. The question is, by what or by whom? A.J. Swoboda, in his book On the Sabbath, writes, "Our 24/7 culture conveniently provides every good and service we want, when we want, how we want. Our time-saving devices, technological convenience, and cheap mobility have seemingly made life much easier and interconnected. As a result, we have more information at our fingertips than anyone in history. Yet with all this progress, we are ominously dissatisfied. In bowing at these sacred altars of hyperactivity, progress, and technological compulsivity, our souls increasingly pant for meaning and value and truth as they wither away, exhausted, frazzled, displeased, ever on edge. The result is a hollow culture that, in Paul's words, is ever learning but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Increasingly so. Our bodies wear ragged. Our spirits thirst. We have an inability to simply sit still and be. As we drown ourselves in 24/7 living, we seem to be able to do anything but quench our true thirst for the life of God." He actually goes on and he says, "We have become perhaps the most emotionally exhausted, psychologically overworked, spiritually malnourished people in history." I'm just here to cheer you up this morning. Now, I have good news for you. Into this human condition of restlessness, Jesus of Nazareth comes to you to offer you rest, not just for your body, but for your soul. Jesus says in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I love how Eugene Peterson's The Message paraphrases this. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Yes, yes, yes. Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Jesus' vision for how we are to live in God's kingdom is grounded in rest. In John 15:1, Jesus says, "I am the true vine." And he goes on, but the word picture that he gives here is about bearing fruit. And throughout John's gospel, fruit is defined as love, joy, and peace. Jesus' word picture is not one of ambition. It's one of abiding. What Jesus is saying, it's not about striving to like be more loving. Or I got to strive to be more joyful. If I really work at it, I might experience more peace. Rather, it's the result of resting in the Father's presence. That as a result of this rest, we then bear the fruit of love, joy, and peace. Consequently, if we break off this connection with him, the vine, whether it's through sin or just through hurry and busyness and constantly distracted by our phone and entertainment and slaves to our schedule, Either way, the result is the same. You are cut off from God and you bear no fruit. And in the place of love and joy and peace is burnout, compromise, anger, sadness, resentment, etc. Obviously not Jesus' heart for you. Without rest, we cannot be the people Jesus calls us to be. We can't live the life that he's offering. My question for you is, do you view rest, Sabbath, sleep, margin, do you view those things as essential components in your life with Jesus? Or are those things over here, maybe in the category of self-help, or like a podcast, or for people who aren't type A like you and don't get a 4.0? Or are they central components to your apprenticeship to Jesus? Jesus said, the greatest commandment in one word is love. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. I'm sure you've discovered this, but like 80%, maybe more, 80% of loving well just has to do with not being emotionally unhealthy and it's emotional health, being spiritually awake, and not being exhausted. If only there was a practice from Jesus to mitigate this restlessness that would help us tap in somehow to this rest for our soul. Ladies and gentlemen, at the top of the list is the Sabbath. Notice in Matthew 28 again when Jesus invites us to come to him for rest. The very next line, the very next verse, it's actually the beginning, it's Mark 12. Verse 1. And just keep in mind that the chapter breaks, that was added way later, somewhat arbitrarily at that. What happens is we're reading and you get to the new chapter and it gives the impression that what comes before or after the break is not connected, when in fact it totally is. Very next verse, Mark gives us not one, but two stories about Sabbath. Mark is trying to help us connect the dots between this rest in Jesus by giving us, again, two stories on this practice of Sabbath. Last week we said our word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, and it simply means to stop. To stop. To stop working. To stop striving. To stop worrying. Just stop and rest. I want you to think about the images that come to us through lifestyle advertising. Here's a couple of examples. From Dasani, sparkling water. Obviously, it's not just about the water. It's about relaxing on the weekend with friends. To this portable fridge that you can take with you as you get out and experience nature. To new sheets that make you want to stay in bed all day. To a new oven. What are they selling here? Quality family time at home. Making lasting memories with your kids while they're still young. Almost all of these are images of stopping, of Sabbath. Unless it's marketing for like cars or like hard alcohol, 9 times out of 10, it's about Sabbath. Stopping. The irony is, marketers know that you ache for this and don't have it. They know that when you look at friends relaxing with a drink by this outdoor fireplace, there's something in you that goes, they know that you're tired. They know that you're too stressed. They know that you actually don't even have time for friends. You don't have any of this. Forget the fireplace. And you ache for it. And the irony is, they offer to sell it to you. Now, my point is not that there's anything wrong with that. My point is, you don't need to buy anything to Sabbath. You don't need an interior designer. You don't need to be rich or cool. You just need to Sabbath, to stop. This ancient practice goes all the way back. It actually it actually predates Jesus. It predates Israel. It goes back not to the Ten Commandments. The origin is day 7 of creation itself. So this is nothing new. It's not a new idea. Tragically, it is new to many of us. Again, A.J. Swoboda, he says, the Sabbath has largely been forgotten by the church, which has uncritically mimicked the rhythms of the industrial and success-obsessed West. The result? Our road-weary, exhausted churches have largely failed to integrate Sabbath into their lives as vital elements of Christian discipleship. It is not as though we do not love God. We love God deeply. We just do not know how to sit with God anymore. The Sabbath is an ancient practice from the way of Jesus, literally woven into creation, and we desperately need to recover it. Hebrews 4, verse 9 says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works just as God did from his. Let us, therefore, make every effort to enter that rest. Now, the point of this passage, and there are several verses before, and it's actually a bit complex and kind of layered, but the writer of Hebrews is saying, Sabbath is actually more than just a day. It's a way of being in the world. It's a spirit of restfulness that comes from living in the Father's presence all week long. John Mark Comer, in his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, frames it like this. The Sabbath is about restfulness compared to relentlessness. It's about margin over busyness. Presence to the moment over a life of hurry. It's about quiet over noise. It's about deep relationships with my family, my friends, my community over isolation and individualism. It's delight over distraction, enjoyment over envy of what he, she, they have. It's clarity, who you are, what you're made to do, over confusion, sort of the fog of the urgent. It's gratitude over greed. It's contentment. I'm okay with my life, how it is. Over discontentment, this nagging sense that I just don't have enough. It's working from love, like my self-worth is grounded in God. Your identity is who you are loved by, not what you do or have or what people think. Working from love rather than working for love. Working as contribution rather than work as accumulation and accomplishment. And finally, a life of trust in God. Over against, not the opposite, which is not doubt, but anxiety, worry. Question, which list best describes you? And if you identify at the moment more in column B, listen, zero shame, zero guilt about that. This affects all of us, as you heard me say at the beginning. So much of our world conspires to keep us from moving out of this into this. And yet we long for this restfulness. When we crave rest to the point where we identify it with heaven. Grant us, O Lord, eternal rest. Let me die so I can just finally get a day off. Ronald Rollheiser says this way, true restfulness is a form of awareness, a way of being in life. It is living ordinary life with a sense of ease, gratitude, appreciation, peace, and prayer. We are restful when ordinary life is enough. Is your ordinary life enough? Today. Not when you figure out your major, not when you graduate, not when you get a new house. Today. Is your ordinary life enough? One of the key tasks for all of us as apprentices, disciples of Jesus, it's to actually find the goodness of God in our actual life today, not in some idealized version of life tomorrow. No wonder the writer of Hebrews speaking of Sabbath and this spirit of restfulness, says, make every effort to enter that rest. Notice the irony? Like, work really hard to rest. Because there's a discipline to Sabbath that's difficult for a lot of us. It takes intentionality. It doesn't just happen. In fact, it actually requires some preparation, some planning, especially if you adopt a number of key practices around the Sabbath. Side note, there are some who take this spirit of restfulness that Hebrews 4 talks about, and they use it to then justify actually not practicing the Sabbath, since, and it kind of goes like this, every day is a Sabbath for Christians. I get that. You can make that case, except for the woven into the fabric of creation part. But my point is, I don't think it actually works in practice. Yes, the Sabbath is more than a day, but it's not less than a day. It's a primary discipline or practice by which we cultivate a spirit of restfulness for our lives as a whole. If you want the spirit of restfulness all week long, it starts with practicing Sabbath. Walter Brueggemann has a great line. He says, people who keep Sabbath live all 7 days differently. Let's talk practice. Some of you are already here. You're working on it. You've grown a lot in this area. Others of you perhaps are kind of like, where do I even start? First, pick a day. Establish a rhythm. Give it a test run. There are three basic options. There is the traditional Sabbath. Like in Jewish practice, it's Friday at sundown until Saturday, the same time. Two, there is the Lord's Day Sabbath. For most Christians, it's Sunday. It's why we actually come together and begin our Sabbath by worshiping together. It's a part of delighting in God. Three, a weekday Sabbath. Let's say you work on the weekends or whatever. So no right or wrong. All three are great. For us, for our family, Sunday is mostly a work day. I leave the house. Everyone's in bed. I leave at 5:30, and I don't get back until the afternoon. I know some of you are like, well, you only work one day a week. And so for us as a family, Saturday just makes a lot more sense. Start with where you are. I highly recommend that you pick a consistent day, that you're not always getting to the beginning of the week going, what's it going to be this week? It just helps you plan. It helps you stay consistent. I know some of you have a sporadic or rotating work schedule, and I get all that. I don't have any easy answers. You're going to have to be creative. If you are convinced you can't possibly take a whole day, first of all, Jesus did. He was a pretty busy guy. I would encourage you to start with a half day, to work your way up. I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying right now, because listen, a full day is, I'm so convinced of the benefit of that, but I'm torn because I want you to, like, something is better than nothing. So start where you are. If you're thinking, what should I do? What should I do? See the problem? Yeah, that's part of it. Sabbath is a day for stopping. So what? Matt, are you telling us just to do nothing? Is that it? No, here's what I'm saying. Figure out what work is for you. And I bet you know. And then don't do those things. It's not about a checklist, but then again, there are some recommended traditionally Sabbath practices. You read the literature on this over centuries, and here are a number of the practices. One, feasting and eating. That's good news. You get to enjoy all your favorite foods one day a week. Again, why am I having to sell people on this? Reading of Scripture, the Talmud, which is the kind of Jewish, ancient Jewish commentary on the Hebrew Scriptures, very specifically mentions lovemaking. Some of you couples are like, okay, I'm into Sabbath. Sweetheart, it's the Sabbath. Taking a walk, napping, that's like a key best practice. Time with family and close friends. I want to encourage you, if you have kids at home, to invite your family into this. This is not a day where you just go off and like disappear and you're golfing the whole day and you don't see your family. How are we doing this together? By the way, I would argue that very few things would shape the life of your children than seeing this modeled consistently over years. You're actually discipling them one way or the other. And they're not going to see this anywhere else in our culture. For me, it means taking a portion of the day, often just to get alone for an hour or so and just to read, to journal, to reflect on what I'm grateful for. Not what do I have to buy and what do I need and what's not right, but what am I grateful for? It's not a to-do list. It's basically a day to stop, to rest and delight, first and foremost in God and then in the life that you have been given in His world. Let me challenge you further. How many of you have one of these? And I actually want to teach you something. You guys might not know this, so I want to just take a minute here. But this is crazy. There's these two buttons, and it's hard to figure out. But when you get it, you hold them down for like 5 seconds, and then your phone turns off. That's scary, isn't it? You don't have to worry, though, because the people who invented these little demonic devices, they also ensured that when you turn it back on, there's a little apple that flashes with a bite taken out of it. Just to remind you, you know, that you're back in the Garden of Eden after the fall. I mean, it's crazy. Even they get it. Like, they understand. You do know you've been eating from the wrong tree all week, right? The truth of the matter is we're often wondering, God, why are you so quiet? God, why aren't you speaking to me? And I can't help but wonder if part of the answer is because this is what we're doing with our whole lives, just walking around, wah, 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 wah. I mean, even older people, just slower, wah, 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 right? But everybody, it's everybody. Do you know what happens when you turn this off? When you turn this thing off, oftentimes God starts speaking really loud, but it's terrifying to turn off. So consider that as part of your Sabbath. Now, if you're on the fence on this and you're pushing back and running through the arguments and the whatabouts and the resistance and all that, and I'm the exception to the rule, that's fine. Don't do it. This is simply an invitation. You have to decide if you're up for it. If you're not up for it, though, I would just ask you honestly, how's your soul? And are you growing in love and joy and peace? Trying harder is not going to fix the underlying problem. Rest, the Sabbath, delight in God just might. If you're in, I want to give you four quick, things to remember. First, none of these are rules to obey. It's not legalism. The problem in Jesus' day wasn't the Sabbath as a commandment or as a practice. The problem was religious people had added all these things onto it. So they had regulations about how many steps you could take on the Sabbath before it's considered work. You're not supposed to prepare food. You're not even supposed to light a fire. In fact, some of them said you're not supposed to have a bowel movement on the Sabbath. So just that's the kind of people you want to invite to a party, right? And Jesus shows up and he's breaking all these rules. He's not breaking the commandment. He's breaking the extra stuff. He's saying you guys are missing the point. You're missing the heart. It's supposed to be a gift. It's not a duty or an obligation or a curse or a weight around people's necks. Up until fairly recently, there were strict Presbyterian churches in Scotland that on Sundays would tie the swings down to the ground that are on the swing set. Because we don't want kids playing on the Sabbath. In conservative areas of Utah, there are home builders that install special drains in the floor of your garage so that you can go in on a Sunday, shut the garage door, and wash your car without your neighbors knowing. I mean, it gets crazy, and it raises all these questions. What can we do? And can we go out to eat? And can we buy stuff? And can I mow the lawn on the Sabbath? And all these things. And again, what is work to you? Don't do it. For me, it actually takes a little bit of thinking because sometimes it depends. Like, for example, in the spring, when the lawn wars are kicking off between me and this one neighbor, she's in her 70s, and I don't know if she knows that we're in a battle for the best yard, but I think she kind of knows. And Jan's a tough competitor, too, because she has a lot of time. So when all that's happening in the spring, there's nothing I enjoy more. There's nothing more restful and like to kind of help rest my mind than just being out working in the yard. Come July, when it's become clear that this is not going to be my year to win, then I hate it. It's a chore, and I have to get it done before Saturday. So again, the point is, I think a lot of us, we know that man wasn't made for the Sabbath. What we've kind of lost is that it was actually made for us, that it is a gift. It's not a burden. It's life-giving. And so maybe a better question for you is what you're doing on the Sabbath producing a more loving, joyful, more at peace you? Two, remember the J curve. And I was going to put a picture of a J curve, but it turns out it's just a J. When you begin any new skill, most of us actually get a little bit worse before we get better. When I was learning to play guitar, I had taught myself chords and basic strumming, and you know, it was okay. But I really wanted to be able to read music. I could read music from piano, but like where the notes were on the guitar. And so back then, there were no YouTube videos, right? There wasn't like an app to teach you. My mom had to drive me to some guy's apartment. His name was Ronnie. And I remember this because he had a couple of iguanas and lots of swords and some glass, like, dragon figurines. Anyway, also back then, parents apparently dropped their kids off at just all kinds of places without checking anything out first. After many months of practice and learning these boring, stupid, inane songs like how to play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, after many months of diligence and practice, I found myself, well, pretty solidly in the bottom of the J curve, but I was getting better. I was becoming average. Three, you get my point. When it comes to Sabbath, I want to encourage you to beware of Sabbath-ish. Kind of. Again, because it's different for you than it is for me. It can get away from us. Hey, did you practice Sabbath this week, or how'd it go? Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, I didn't go into the office, and I didn't check my email, so that's pretty good. I did manage to get my taxes done and clean out my gutters and, like, battle the crowds at Walmart, but other than that, eh. Again, not in a legalistic sense. It's just everything is going to conspire against us doing this. I have to fight this every week. Yesterday, I got to the end of the day, and I was just kind of talking to Liz about it, and we're talking about our days, and I said, yeah, all this was good, but like I did a couple of things. It wasn't work, but it was Sabbath-ish. I knew it wasn't life-giving, but I felt like I had to do it. Four, give it time. Don't be surprised if you actually take this seriously, that in your first attempts at this, early on, if you feel anxious, angry even, if you feel awkward or agitated, do you know what that is? That's the problem is not the Sabbath. That's actually real life catching up with you. You know how cartoon gravity operates a little bit differently than real life gravity? Like Wile E. Coyote runs off the cliff and he doesn't fall as long as he keeps running. He doesn't fall until he realizes where he is. We laugh at that, you know, as kids, but the deeper truth is that we actually all believe in cartoon gravity at some level. As long as we don't stop, as long as we keep going, keep juggling, keep running, we can avoid, some of you are like, oh, that's why that's, yeah, we can avoid the inevitable crash. So, if you feel that depressed thud when you try this, give it time. The problem's not the Sabbath. Look, if I tried to run a mile right now, it would not be pleasant. That's not proof that running is a waste of time. It's a reflection of how out of shape I am right now. If you really do this, I need to warn you about one thing. You might get hooked. You actually might get hooked on this. It's what's happened for me once I committed and once I experienced. You might fall in love with this day. I mean, how could you not love a day that's so good for us, that's so deeply replenishing, that helps us to trust God, that helps us rest in His presence? So I got to give you a heads up. Sabbath keeping is a discipline that will mess with you. Because once you move beyond just thinking about it, you begin practicing, it gets in you body, mind, and soul. You will long for a day that stretches out in front of you with nothing in it but rest and delight. You'll long for a simple way to turn your heart to God that doesn't feel like it takes so much effort. During the week, your whole self will strain toward the Sabbath with thoughts of, I know I can make it because Sabbath is coming. I mean, how often does it feel like your work just stretches out forever in front of you with no end? When you live in the rhythm of Sabbath, there's an end. There's always an end. Sabbath is always a few days away. It's so hopeful. You will emerge from Sabbath with renewed energy and renewed hope, thinking, I can face my life now because I've rested. You'll have more clarity about your life. I'm telling you, Sabbath will become the centerpiece of your week. You'll crave it. You'll grieve it if something interrupts it. And I know this because it's what's happened to me over many, many years. I have fallen in love with a day called the Sabbath. Would you stand? We'll pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for calling us into rest. Thank you for knowing what it is we most desperately need and for calling us to that. Lord, I pray that you give each one of us a vision of what one day a week set apart as holy, as rest, what that could look like. Lord, help us as we begin putting the pieces together and working with our families or talking with those we're in community with about what this could look like. Help us to be honest about the challenges and our hesitation. And Lord, I pray that you would just give us the courage and the discipline to begin experiencing this. May we experience true rest and delight in you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, thanks for being here, everyone. Have a great week, and look forward to hearing how your Sabbath practice went next week.